Welcome to the X-Men Tests podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
And my name's Sonia Rappaport.
And today we're reviewing Mojo Vision, the 11th episode of season 2 and the 24th episode overall. But, Sonia, before we begin, we have a special guest with us today.
Love having guests.
And this guest's name is Ryan Wilson. And Ryan is from the Get to the Good Part podcast. And Ryan, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going, Ryan? Yeah.
Great.
Oh, awesome. Ryan, where are you calling us from?
I am calling you right now from my office / adult child bedroom in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Oh, my God. Awesome. Yeah, we're from Brooklyn, New York, in case you didn't know. As you can tell, listeners, Ryan, Sonia, and I have been long friends since 2 days ago when we randomly reached out to him because we really enjoy his podcast, Get to the Good Part, which right now is focused on the Ernest Cline novel Ready Player One.
Is it Ernest or Ernst?
All right, yeah, Ryan, is it Ernest or Ernst? You have to settle this right. First controversy.
It's actually Ernest.
Okay.
Oh, is it?
Okay. Yeah, and most people will call him Ernie Cline.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense. All right, yeah. Ernie Cline. Good old Ernie Cline.
I mean, not me. I don't know him personally. Oh,
right. Yeah, well, maybe one day. Yeah. So anyway, you have a podcast that goes through the book Ready Player One. I believe it's a 2011 novel. You go through it one chapter at a time, right?
That's right. Yeah, we do a chapter every week, and it's just kind of a long-form discussion about the themes and, you know, I mean, if you've read Ready Player One, you know it's just rife with nostalgic references.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talk about that, break it down. Yeah, that's basically the podcast.
Which is why we figured it would be pretty safe to reach out to you without knowing you, just that we could probably find a fellow nerd to talk about some 90s stuff with. So, cool.
Oh, yeah.
Well, don't assume Ryan's a nerd. He sounds like a cool guy to me.
Okay.
It's all good company, you know.
Okay, yeah, all right.
The game is not on, so you can't see me, but that would confirm it for you, probably.
Okay, well, yeah, that's a good baseline.
I will add, though... one thing when I was checking out your guys' podcast after you reached out and everything, one thing that I noticed is that there's a pretty big similarity between your podcast and ours, because you guys go through the episodes with each episode. Every week you do one episode. It's kind of the same format. So
yeah, pretty systematic. See, another signal that we all are probably nerds.
We felt a kinship with your podcast when we listened to it. So, and it's really nice of you to just so readily accept to do a little cross promotion here. We're going to talk more about Ready Player One and your podcast towards the end of this episode. I'm very excited to talk to you about that. I don't know where that's going to go, but before we do, let's just dive into this episode. So, Mojo Vision. This is, I have to say, up till now, this is the craziest episode of the animated series of the X-Men. Would you not agree, Ryan?
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
It is bizarre.
Yeah.
Can I just ask, just because we're like first meeting you, kind of like, do you have like a long history with the X-Men, or like specifically with the cartoon, or specifically not with the animated series, or like what's your take?
Sure.
On it?
Sure. Yeah. No. When I was a kid, I used to watch the animated series quite a bit, and you know, it was one of those things that, like, I think I get a touch of nostalgia every now and again, and once every couple of years I'll go back and watch a couple episodes. But you know, I was definitely more into the comic book when I was a kid. I will give you this little bit of background, you might like this. My son, his name is Remy.
Oh my
God. And he was named after Remy LeBeau.
No, really?
And yes, yeah.
Wow.
And not having that stuff twice, my wife put the gabosh when my daughter was born. her name is Margot, but her middle name is Rogue.
Oh my God! Wow. So you are a huge X-Men fan, I take it.
I like the X-Men. Yeah,
cool.
That's awesome. All right, cool. Yeah, so you enjoyed the cartoon and you're more into the comic books. Yeah, great. Any thoughts on the movies too? I mean, big fan, not really. You know, where do you come down in the movie series?
I think. As far as the movies go, I mean, unfortunately, I don't really have a whole lot positive to say.
That's fine.
Yeah. Which, you know, like, you know, it probably doesn't belong in this space. I think a lot of people that listen to your podcast are like all around X-Men fans. I would think, but you know, I mean, there were a couple of the movies that I actually liked. Logan, I saw recently. That was really good.
Yes.
I think X-Men First Class was really good.
But overall, though, they didn't meet your vision of X-Men as a comic book fan and maybe a fan of the show.
I think that if I can kind of soapbox here for a couple seconds.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
I think that early X-Men movies suffered from the same kind of thing that DC is suffering through right now when it comes to adapting comics to film. It's just, how do you hit that sweet spot with them? You know, there's so much story in X-Men, and a lot of it is, you know, deals with a pretty controversial past as far as, you know, society is concerned.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to go too heavy because it's a comic book movie, and how do you rate that kind of thing? So, I mean, I understand when it, you know, from a filmmaking standpoint, how it's juggling a lot of chainsaws, you know?
It's very,
lob your arm off.
I mean, you know, not to get too into it too much, but my thing with the movies, which I enjoy for the most part, and I'm going to, reminding the fans, we're going to have a special episode for every X-Men movie there ever was at some point. But basically, I think overall, the X-Men would lend itself better to a long-form television format than a movie series, in my opinion, because mainly because of the soap opera elements that are going on with all the characters. And there's so many, like, tons of characters. They're all interesting. I just think, like, personally, like, my fantasy, which will never come true, although it's almost coming true, is that there'd be, like, an HBO serious drama version of the X-Men.
Yeah.
We do have Legion, which is, like, is about as serious as it gets. But Legion is kind of like a spinoff, you know, like ancillary character focus. But you're right. I totally agree with you. I think there's like something about like they haven't quite fully nailed the sweet spot that is the X-Men, you know, drawing from whatever, you know, popular mediums you want to draw from. I mean, obviously mainly the comic books. All right, cool. All right. Well, anyway, well, this episode, Mojo Vision, like I said, this is thus far the most insane episode yet of this cartoon. It opens with a comic book character. I think Longshot is from the 80s. I'm not sure. He's probably from the late 80s or early 90s. We see him. Go on.
That haircut supports that.
Right.
Yeah, he looks like MacGyver in his like most dire years of haircut.
Yeah, that's like full on like platinum blonde mullet. You know,
it's used bad.
To be business in the front, party in the back, but now it's just kind of all party and not a good kind. Yeah.
That's like a Picasso of Jerry Seinfeld. It's just.
Yeah. So Longshot. So we open up on this guy Longshot. He's like. We see him fighting all these crazy monsters. I guess some of them are like brood monsters and other like terrible like lobster monsters. We also catch a brief glimpse of Psylocke, who I think is like our second brief glimpse cameo on the show. I think Gambit had a flashback of her at one point. But anyway, he's like jumping around, fighting monsters, shooting them in a hover car and like in some weird futuristic space and time. We don't really know just yet. And it turns out he's the star of his own crazy television show, appropriately called Longshot. So it's a bizarre introduction to this episode, and it sets up this character. It's not, this episode's not so much about Longshot, it's more about this insane villain called Mojo. Now, we're making fun of Longshot's appearance, but Mojo is quite more ghastly in his appearance. Ryan, you want to describe?
you can edit this out if you want, but to me, it's like, imagine what would happen if Rush Limbaugh and a spider had just, like, come together in some sort of a freak accident. That's Mojo.
And that might not be out of Rush Limbaugh's future, as far as we know. There's still time for him to mutate to a spider.
Who knows?
Yeah, as long as he stays alive, he'll have some, like, you know, he's rich enough, he'll have some Mr. Burns-esque, like, body transplant into the distant future. He'll never die.
You can see that happening. Yeah.
And speaking of other animated classic shows, you know, we just rewatched this episode again. We watched it twice in preparation for this recording, and we just rewatched this one. And the first thing that kind of struck my mind in a general sense, Rick and Morty. Do you watch this show?
I have a little bit here and there. Mm-hmm. I know that I just, like, completely, you know, diminished all of my nerd cred there because Rick and Morty is kind of the thing. But I've seen it, like I said, here and there. I'm definitely pretty familiar with it.
Well, there's an episode of Rick and Morty, and it's a science fiction show about, like, a crazy scientist who sort of abuses his grandson and makes him go on, like, horrible extra or interdimensional travels with him. There's an episode where they watch interdimensional television, and the stuff they watch is so insane. It's like, it kind of like, it's kind of the stuff that this guy Mojo would air on his TV network.
Right. Well, that stuff is, like, a little more insane, but it does, like, the storylines do run kind of parallel because, like, Rick and Morty is known for being, like, really, like, outlandish and disgusting.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
And, like, I feel like Mojo really ticks that box.
Right, yeah. Yeah, we're in, like, the disgusting, like, comedy sphere of science fiction, and that, like, that runs parallel with a lot of things we've seen, like Rick and Morty, kind of almost like it veers into the Futurama territory as well. So it's just kind of like, it's an interesting diversion for the X-Men show, which you wouldn't think, like, would have it in it to go to a place like that.
Right.
Well, did you get the feeling at all? There was a little bit of social commentary with that character too, because he was just sort of like it was sort of like what you would imagine a television writer's caricature of, you know, an overbearing producer would be.
Oh yeah, it's a total, like, yeah, Mojo the character is a total send up of all, like, overbearing, completely disgusting TV executives of the 1990s. I feel like the TV executive was a huge villain in general, like, fictional narratives throughout the 90s.
Right, in, like, movies
and TV shows.
Yeah.
There's something, like, I guess they're so earned the ire of various writers in whatever, like, media or form that you would see them come up a lot. And Mojo is, like, the, like, most, like, cartoon, you know, version of that. Yes.
Well, you remember in Wayne's World, World, Mr. Big at the end.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of that, too.
Yeah. Well, but ironically, like, Rob Lowe, the slick Rob Lowe was, like, the sleaziest one, because Mr. Big was the hero in Wayne's World.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're right.
But like, he had that, like, same sort of, like, quote, you know, sitting in the back of, like, a limo, smoking a cigar.
Had, like, the weird ponytail, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just spitting out, like, catchphrases, like, I'm going to make you a star, and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've sort of jumped the gun a bit. Let me explain what's going on. So we've got this Mojo guy. He puts on TV shows, and he lives in this place called the Mojoverse. And it's not a place. It's a whole dimension. So somehow this guy Mojo has, like, got an entire dimension named after himself. He lives in, like, a ginormous castle, like, slash, like, Mount Rushmore sculpture of his head, where he hosts this, like, huge – it's, like, this huge arena where it looks like there's just, like, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of spectators, and they're all watching his TV programming. And, you know, I didn't know much about Mojo from the comics. I didn't read too many, like, Mojo stories in the X-Men, but, like, I just, you know, read on Wikipedia, and it says that Mojo actually draws a lot of his magical powers from his viewing audience. Like, the more people that tune into his shows, like, gives him greater strength and power. So that's, like, an insane ability to have, first of all. And, like, and then they also said that the entire dimension is based on people just enjoying gladiator-like TV events. So, right, so it's, like, a whole bunch of, like, weird social commentary, like, crossed with bizarre, like, totally out of left field science fiction themes. And it's just, like, I don't know, like, it's one of those things that gives, like, the X-Men those, like, great extra notes of science fiction, you know, where the X-Men could be sort of, like, gritty and down to earth, and they could also be, like, going into outer space or into extra dimensions doing insane things.
This episode is totally one-off, right? Like, we don't hear from Mojo again over the course of the series, do we?
I think Longshot comes back in one of the later episodes that you know, we'll get to way down the line. So, and I don't think his reappearance is as good as what's going on in this one. So I like this one really hits like a sweet spot of just like showing like these bizarre like side X-Men characters.
It's just interesting because we've been so appreciating all these different like little story arcs that they're doing, like two-parter episodes and like broad themes throughout a whole season or something, and this is like the exact opposite of that, and I like it anyway because it's just so like standalone bizarre.
Well, you know what, Ryan and Sonia, you know what thought I had watching this too? This is like the only time the X-Men, it's like a Simpsons Halloween special episode.
Yeah. True.
Right? Like, it's like got three little mini stories, they're all insane. And there's like a comical, like sort of dark bent to them.
Sorry, I keep cutting you off. Go ahead. So,
all right. Anyway, you're still with us, right, Ryan?
I'm still here. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Cool. Just want to make sure. And another thing I want to say about Mojo, he also has like kind of a Sam Kinison kind of vibe to him. Like whoever the voice actor was doing him, it felt like real strong.
I don't know who that is.
He's like that. He was that famous comedian from the '80s. He died tragically. He would shout a lot. And he also had, like, a weird, like, hair. Like, I don't know if he didn't. He had, like, a weird, like, ugly ponytail as well. Oh. You would know him if you recognized him.
He looks like a bee-stung, like, 15th century orphan. Like, he just wears this, like, cabbie hat and just, he just looks...
Oh, yeah, you're talking about Sam Kinison.
Swollen looking, yeah.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Sam Kinison.
All right. So, anyway, so now, that's what's going on in the Mojo dimension, and Mojo is pissed that... Even though this long shot show seems like pretty awesome, the ratings are down, despite it being action packed at every turn. But so Mojo wants like a new show, and so his like sort of Alfred-esque assistant guy in purple robes. I say he's Alfred-esque because he speaks like with a British accent and is real. You know, he just sort of acts like Alfred from Batman. He suggests the X-Men from some other dimension. And then it's here we see the X-Men in action, and Mojo's like, yes, get them. But cut to our Earth, or the X-Men's Earth, wherever that is. And the X-Men are at the mall. And this is like, if you... Ryan, I don't know how much you've like really like remember from the animated series. The X-Men are at the mall quite a bit.
Right.
Which is like a real like 90s place to be. You know, it's like, I wonder if that's dated to, like, if you showed this to, like a 12-year-old today, if they would, like, understand why people are at the mall all the time.
Why is the whole group at Best Buy?
Yeah.
Is this an event?
Yeah, exactly. So the X-Men, they're at the mall yet again. They're shopping for a new television. Jubilee has again broken, like, their home electronics. In a previous episode, we saw that Jubilee had broken her CD player and needs to get it repaired constantly, because of her fireworks powers, and here she's broken like the remote control or something. So Cyclops and Jean are shopping for a new television at the television store, and it's here that Mojo appears on all the TV sets, and he's making his pitch to Cyclops, like trying to sign them like they're TV stars. And Cyclops and Jean are quite like taken aback at this. Any thoughts, guys?
Well, I mean, this is the weird thing watching this to me. It was like, this looked like when, you know, eventually they have, you know, they have words
right.
that end up, you know, going to a fight, and they just kind of look so, you know, so ambushed by the whole situation. It looks like the first time they've been in this kind of situation in their entire lives.
It's completely insane what's going on. Like they get into a fight with Mojo, and he starts electrocuting them through the television sets through another dimension, and Cyclops decides to fight back by shooting all the television sets that he can with his optic blast.
I feel like it just shows like how naive he is. He like shoots each and every television screen, but it's like obviously like Mojo is not the television screen or like in the television or something.
Yeah,
so it's like some technology that Cyclops can't understand or deal with.
But it's like Ryan said, he's like totally ambushed. And Jean intervenes. She senses that Cyclops is dying because he's being thoroughly electrocuted by Mojo, and she begs him to stop. And It's just at this point that Wolverine, Beast, and Storm and Rogue come rushing in. They're also shopping at the mall. And everyone is like, has no idea what the hell is going on. And Mojo decides to kidnap the X-Men because they don't appreciate the offer they're being presented. And so this other crazy character called Spiral, she sort of like transmogrifies herself through the television sets.
Right, the six-armed silver woman.
Yeah, silver-haired woman. She does this crazy interdimensional dance and zaps them all and takes them to the Mojoverse.
Right.
Yeah, so this is the first time the X-Men have crossed dimensions.
Yeah.
Yes, we can say that for certain. They've been transported to the Mojoverse. They're in like a horrible looking glass like cube cage. Mojo transforms them all into their X-Men costumes, and he immediately gets to business, and he starts the first of our three spin-off shows. I guess this one, the first one's called Miami Mutants, and it stars Storm and Cyclops
in a speedboat going through the purple waters of Florida.
Well, before, have you been to Miami, Ryan, by the way?
I have, and it's every bit as pink as the TV portrays it. But no, before we get into that, if I can add something. Did you guys ever see a movie, and I'll tie this back to, you know, the era of Ready Player One,
right,
from the 1980s, a 1987 film called The Running Man.
Oh, yeah.
Starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, yes.
That was immediately what came to my head when I saw this episode.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Running Man.
Yeah, this is like Running Man. Oh, man. Okay, yeah, that's a really good callback, definitely. I mean, this is like, let's just say this is liberally ripping off a lot of, like, references coming to sort of like parodies of television and like pop culture in the 90s and or early 90s, late 80s. I know Running Man is like late 80s. So a lot of themes like that. And then, you know, there's been like a lot. This is like a theme in fiction that like continues. A lot of these sort of like anytime there's like a gladiator arena thing, like with a sci-fi bent, like The Hunger Games is kind of similar to this as well.
Right.
And in the Hunger Games is kind of ripped off that like Japanese movie.
Battle Royale.
Yeah, Battle Royale. Did you ever see that insane movie?
I don't think I have.
That might be worth checking out. That's
super gory. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You'll watch that and you'll say like the Hunger Games sucks like compared to. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Hunger Games movie, but it's,
yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, right. Yeah, this is kind of like The Running Man, like people forced to compete on a sadistic television show. I think there's like even other like examples of that too. I can't remember. But
it's just weird that it's like such a common trope because like how often does that happen in real life? Why do so many people feel the need to tell this story?
And well, it's got that same theme to it too, because with Running Man, it was about the the sadism of like the viewer,
right?
You know,
yeah.
That yeah, you know, I mean, that this show exists because people watch it, and that's the only reason that it exists. And it's kind of like Mojo exists because people like to watch this violent kind of thing happen.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I think especially if you consider where film and television were coming out of the late 80s. I mean, think about it was the era of the action film.
Yeah.
Up until like kind of the late 90s, early 2000s, when it kind of drifted into comedy, rom-com kind of stuff. A lot of what you were seeing was action films, you know, and it was a big commentary about like, and also the Tipper Gore and the whole and ratings were becoming a more significant thing because of violence. So it was a hot topic back there. It was a hot topic.
A hot Tipper Gore reference from a Tennessean.
That's right.
But no, you're absolutely right. And I'm also thinking that, like, I feel like there's this general, like, fear in the 80s and 90s before the internet that people were just totally zombified by their televisions. And that, obviously, like, there was more and more risque things in the 80s and 90s, like more sexual content, more explicit violence. And there's like you said, like Tipper Gore, there's like a fear from like politicians and other commentators that like America was being like couch potatoed in like a really disturbing way. and that, like, what's next? Little did anyone predict what the internet, like, had
I
to
know.
Do.
I know. I was just going to say, I feel like that's not on anyone's radar anymore. Like, right. Nobody is worried about getting zombified by television. All of us are, like, binge-watching 8 episodes of whatever.
Well, I think, like, culture has, like, transformed to being... Everyone's zombified by their phones now.
Mm.
Like, you go into any public place, a train, a restaurant, just people are just staring at their phones. Like, every member of the family, you know, everyone has their own phone or tablet, and they're just, like...
So the television is no longer as interesting, because it's not personalized.
Yeah. Hmm. And the other thing, I mean, it's, like, with, like the rise of the internet, and now, of course, there's 10 million cable channels and a million, like, YouTube channels. Like, there's, like, literally a billion things to watch. It's not, like, the culture isn't as... like gathered around the same shows as they were. There's less sort of like major television events that there might have been in, you know, the 80s, 90s, and obviously even preceding decades.
Right.
So it's like like this fear that like you can mass corrupt the culture at large with like one single idea. Like that's kind of like gone out the window a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of like interesting stuff going on with like that theme overall, and like and things touched on in this little silly cartoon episode. So anyway, back to Miami Mutants. So yeah, so it's like it's Cyclops and Storm like on a speedboat in the purple Miami ocean, dodging drone strikes and robots attacking them. And I remember as a kid watching this episode, like being really stunned when like just a few minutes into their cool little, you know, action movie, they die.
Yeah.
they're totally overwhelmed. They're gotten the best of, and they're like blown up in an explosion. And,
cause not only does no one ever die in X-Men, but like there are heroes. So like, you're like, wait, what? Like two of them at the same time?
Yeah. It's pretty hairy. Like when I was a kid watching this, 11 to 12 years old, 10 years old, the first time, I was pretty worried for the X-Men. And then like at the moment of their death, Mojo, he sort of teleports them to this like two-dimensional glass display case, separate from the prison the other X-Men are kept in.
Right, but back to his dimension.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And Mojo says something like, "Oh, these ratings are amazing. I might have to keep them alive." So, you know, you're told they're not dead yet, but maybe they're sort of like close to death.
Right.
Yeah. They're like he pulls them out right as they're about to die, which would be like a terrible place to be put into suspended animation. You know, like right like the split second before you're dead.
Psychologically damaging, probably.
Right, yeah. Well, this leads into an interesting question, Ryan. So, you know, Ready Player One's a book that deals largely with virtual reality. Like, without getting too much into it, for people who don't know the book and the future movie coming out, like, the main character lives in a future time where everyone in the world accesses virtual reality because the real world is horrible. People want to escape to a better place. In the book, it is like that is it's quite clearly virtual. Like there's no you can't really die in this Ready Player One world. But in do you think like that's a similar thing going on here, that they're fighting in a virtual reality, or do you think like they're actually in danger of getting hurt in this like in these crazy Mojo television shows?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, you know, it's not that virtual reality was unheard of around that time.
Right.
I think 91 was when Lawnmower Man came out. You remember that movie?
Yes.
And you
I
know,
never saw it, but I definitely know about it. And...
Oh God, don't! It's like a it's like Tron with worse graphics. It's like vector virtual reality.
Right.
It's actually a really good movie. I would see it if you haven't. But anyways,
okay.
Yeah. No, I mean. Without having that sort of access point, and again, it's kind of hard to tell because they seem to be in a different dimension, how they interact with the episode or the television show they're right. going through. But yeah. but it's definitely similar in theme to Ready Player One.
Yes.
Because in Ready Player One, obviously, you know, the characters will put on their visor, put on their haptic gloves, which allows them to feel their way around the right. Oasis. And experience a virtual world that is, you know, refined to the point where it's almost difficult for them to tell the difference at times.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, going through something like death, you know,
yeah.
I won't spoil the book for anybody who hasn't read it yet. If you haven't read, go out and pick it up. It will be your new favorite book. It's a blast to read.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there are some similarities there for sure.
the main difference being that in Ready Player One, they put on the gloves and the visor and everything voluntarily, and they know what they're getting
right,
into.
Right, yeah.
They're
not ambushed.
My favorite part of this episode is that, like, the beginning of each of these little mini-episodes that he puts them into, it's like, Storm is in the speedboat, and she's like, how did we get here? Like, she's, like, actively driving a speedboat, and she has no idea what's going on. It's
like, yeah, this is more like Inception, where you don't know what layer of the nightmare right, you're in.
Yeah, this episode can rightly be described as, like, an active nightmare, like a waking nightmare for all these characters.
Yeah.
And that leads to the next mini-story called Rogue Star, starring Beast and Rogue. Now, this is, like, truly the most terrifying of all the episodes presented in the Mojo world. So basically, Rogue and Beast find themselves on a spaceship hurtling towards the sun.
Once again, she's driving a spaceship, and she's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, she's like, just like putting in the seat.
Rogue, you're driving a spaceship.
Yeah.
Get it together.
Yeah, get it together fast. They're in a spaceship hurtling towards the sun. They don't know what to do. They're trying to overcome the controls, and then, like, wouldn't you know it, like, a bunch of, like, monstrous brood alien creatures, like, get, like, injected into their space pod, and Beast is forced to tangle with them as Rogue is, you know, trying to save the ship. And this little moment really terrified me. I have a real fear of, I think, like, dying in space might be, like, one of the most gruesome ways to die, and they give you, like, a double dose here. So, I mean, long story short, like, Beast is fighting with these monsters, and what happens, the hatch gets blown open, he's sucked out into outer space to suffocate and freeze to death, and Rogue can't stop the ship, and she, like, flies into the sun. Yeah, flies into the sun and burns up and dies. Ryan, your thoughts on dying in space?
It's terrifying. It's absolutely horrifying. I think it would be one of the worst ways to die.
Well, I don't know about that, but we could go around about that for hours.
Why? You don't think dying in space is terrible?
I think any kind of dying is terrible.
Well,
all dying is terrible.
I just think there's, like, something extra more terrifying about
it. Really? For me, drowning is worse than dying in space.
But, like, is it?
Okay.
Okay, go on, Ryan.
If I may. I'm sorry. Unfortunately, this is sort of a tell of my character. This is something I've thought a lot about.
All right.
So, now, if you're sucked into the vacuum of space, just you, right. You know, I mean, like, you're just ripped out into space and you know, succumb to the vacuum, then maybe, like, getting burned alive is worse. But imagine being stuck in a spacesuit.
Yes.
Where you're just kind of drifting.
Yeah.
Away from
panicking because you know you're going to die.
Yeah, that's the greatest panic attack to possibly have.
Oh my god.
Is to have you're in the spacesuit, detached from the space capsule, and you've got, you know, however long, maybe an hour if you have enough oxygen. That, like, you know, to be in an enclosed spacesuit in the complete, like, desolate isolation of existence.
Mm.
Yeah. I think
that's the worst way to die.
Yeah, but now Sonya's making me afraid. Like, yeah, drowning would be awful too. I don't want to drown either. yeah, so Rogue and Beast have particularly grisly deaths here. But, you know, again, Mojo transfers them to their sort of, like, 2D sarcophagus plastic case.
They're not dead, so.
Well, yeah, they're not dead.
So it's fine.
Spoilers, like, the show goes on for 3 more seasons. And then, lastly, Jean and Wolverine are transported into the show I Dream of Jean, a not-so-subtle parody of I Dream of Jeannie, I guess.
I really wonder about that. Like, how did Mojo know?
What? About I Dream of Jeannie?
No, because it's Wolverine and Jean, and Wolverine loves Jean.
Oh, well. Oh, yeah. Right. I didn't even put that together.
Like, how does Mojo know, like, you know, their personal feelings?
Well,
creepy.
He's got magical, like, powers of something.
What a creep.
According to Wikipedia, he has a lot of magical energy, so maybe he just knows about. I mean, like, when he's introduced to the X-Men, he's shown a CD of all their exploits. Like, who was filming that? You know what I mean?
Mm.
So it's like he has access to, like, weird, like, ways to spy in on this group of people and presumably, like, understand their entire, all their group dynamics.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I get a real voyeur vibe from him, you know? Like, yeah, he's totally the type of guy that would look into a window.
Right, yeah. And it's like the ultimate person you would not want to see.
Right.
or catch spying on you. All right, so yeah, okay. So in this little mini episode, Wolverine is like out of nowhere scaling a building with his claws, which is always cool to see him use his claws to climb things. Sort of an underrated like usage of his claws that he actually uses like numerous times, but that's cool to see. And Jean is sort of Jean's attacked by the Punisher of all people, the famous Punisher from Marvel Comics. Just another reminder that this show took place in the era before Marvel's properties were all bifurcated amongst different like media conglomerates, and they could just like drop in anyone they wanted to, regardless of, you know, licensing or whatever.
Yeah, and but is it really the Punisher, or is it a robot that looks like the Punisher?
It's a robot.
It's a robot.
Yeah, but yeah. Still, it's a Punisher.
The Punisher doesn't live in the Mojoverse.
No. But but Mojo conjures him. You know. So you get to see Jean Grey and Wolverine in a fantasy battle with the Punisher, which is pretty cool. And then we see Wolverine tangle with the Imperial Shi'ar Guard, which is almost like a preview for season 3, which, you know, is famous for the Phoenix Saga and the Dark Phoenix Saga, where the Imperial Shi'ar Guard is prominently featured. So it's at this point where Jean realizes that she can use her powers to affect the control room and free the X-Men from this horrible, you know, prison they're in. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a funny moment, because when she does, she kind of takes the show off the air, and Mojo's audience, which is like a cast of like hundreds of thousands of strange aliens, they, including Skrulls, by the way, an interesting like Marvel, famous alien Marvel race, they immediately start reading books. I thought that was like a little funny all-time joke like that.
Well, it goes back to like what we were just talking about, you know, that like television zombifies, or supposedly used to zombify people,
right?
And then as soon as there was no television, they went back to reading, which was like,
yeah, okay, so that's a good question. We undeniably know that reading is good for you, right? It's good for your brain, it's good for children, it's good for adults. But before television existed, there were books.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't books like the exact same thing as like television?
No.
do you know what my point is? No, all right, you know, you're wrong, Sonia. I actually read
some, no.
I read an article saying that when books like first, when the printing press made books accessible to the mass public for the first time, people warned about the corrupting damage and influence of books.
Uh-huh.
That people would be squirreled away in their books too much, and it was bad for society. That people wouldn't get fresh air and experience
they
nature.
Books were zombifying people.
That's my point.
Uh-huh.
So it's funny if you look at those. I mean, if you're on Reddit ever,
right,
which
yes,
unfortunately I spend way too much time on, but you'll see sometimes it'll be, you know, those sort of meme posts that are kind of joking around. It's a split screen kind of thing where it says, I wish people would just get off their phones these days. And, you know,
yeah.
Half the panel is people on their phones. The other half is people on the train.
Right.
Every single one of them have a newspaper.
Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I've seen that picture and I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think that like, presents a great point. I just think that human being, like all technology it's thus far in humanity, it's like it's a reflection of the desires and wants of human beings in our society and culture.
Well, it's a reflection of the fact that humans have really smart brains and want like new and interesting information in whatever form it can come in, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna like really nerd out on you a little bit here,
all right.
But here's the difference between... So I agree that like newspapers and phones are essentially the same thing if you're reading content. Reading is actually different from TV or movie viewing because there's like a specific process going on in your brain that causes you to like essentially translate the words into images in your mind, right? Like your brain is doing extra work to create imagery for the words. Whereas when you're watching a movie or a TV show, the imagery is already created for you, so you don't have to do that extra piece of thinking, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the part that's supposedly really, quote-unquote, good for you.
No, you're absolutely right. So it's go on, Ryan. I'm sorry.
I apologize. This is something that I was kind of thinking when I was watching the show, is, you know, it's funny too, because when reading comes along, when the printing press comes along, people say, well, that's not the same as sitting around and interacting with people or telling your stories, word of mouth. Right. And then when television comes along, well, it's not the same as building the imagery in your mind as you're reading it. When virtual reality comes along, which is very close at hand, Ready Player One deals with this a lot. Yeah. Are people going to say, well, it's not the same, like, you're not immersing yourself anymore, your mind's not forcing you to get it immersed, you're sort of a passive viewer. Mm. When you become an active viewer, it divorces you from reality.
Right.
The result of which, if you've read Ready Player One, you see what happens.
Right.
Unfortunately, it leads to dystopia because people aren't paying attention to the problems of the world because they have this utopian society within, their goggles. So to that end, television is great. When television's invented, readings seem great,
go on.
It's where you're at in history, I think. I don't know.
And it's funny, it's like to think back about television. I think we're all the same age here. Thinking of television in the 90s, there's something quaint about it. It's like I do miss the communalness of it. Watching it with my family. Watching a show like Seinfeld every week where you'd all gather around and
wait a whole week for it and you'd be like excited.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like that's. I don't know if it's like quite the same as it used to be anymore. And there's like a real excitingness to like a television event. That just doesn't like.
There's still release dates.
I know, but it's like I don't know, but it's just.
Well, you make a really great point there because I sort of skipped a step by going directly into virtual reality because, like you said, event watching versus binge watching.
Right.
Yeah.
There have been studies done on the effects of binge watching. Yeah. And, again, that just. Huh? Yeah, it's not positive right now. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right, so let's sort of like cap this narrative here. So Longshot has been behind the scenes working. He wants the X-Men freed as well because he wants to get his TV show back. I guess he doesn't mind living and working in the Mojoverse, and so he goes to the control room and tells Spiral, as Jean is manipulating all the machines, that he's freeing the X-Men, and he's kind of flirting with her too in a funny way. And the X-Men are freed, and they're sent back to before they're sent back to Earth, they fight Mojo. They drop his
his television equipment.
Yeah.
The control room, basically, was suspended from the ceiling. It drops down on him.
Yeah, it drops on his head. And the X-Men return to Earth, and my first thought was, how are they going to explain all this to Gambit?
Can you imagine? Gambit, we had a crazy day.
He's going to think that they all took acid or something.
He doesn't care.
Yeah. It's probably true.
He probably doesn't care.
Really? All right, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah. Cool, guys.
Yeah, why wasn't Gambit there? They could have used him.
Gambit doesn't go to the mall.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
he
to the mall. Yeah,
he needs to buy his playing cards.
Yeah. In the very first episode, Gambit, we see Gambit buying two boxes of playing cards.
Really?
Yeah, which is really, that's a hilarious detail, because as a kid, you might wonder, how does he replenish all his playing cards? Well, kids, now he goes to the mall and he buys them in bulk. So.
Like you.
Yeah.
I never pictured him as a mall shopper. I thought he was like a bodega guy, just swiping him on his way to a place.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
Well, when in Rome, he's staying in Westchester.
And then as a stinger at the end of this episode, we get a preview of what the final two episodes, which are a two-parter, a conclusion of season two. We see Professor X and Magneto in the Savage Land. We get a glimpse of the dangerous Sauron, this pterodactyl man guy who I guess he kidnaps. We see him kidnap Kazar's wife. Kazar we haven't met yet, but he's like a jungle guy. And Magneto warns Professor X about how dangerous Sauron is, and it's going to bridge us to the conclusion of season two called Reunion, which is actually a really awesome two-part finale to season two that really wraps up this Professor X lost in the Savage Land with Magneto storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And with Mr. Sinister.
Yeah, they've really been milking that one. They've been drawing it out.
Yeah.
So Sauron.
Yeah.
Is also the name of the wizard in.
Is it pronounced the same?
Is it?
Lord of the Rings, Sauron, and Sauron? Is it the same thing?
I thought it was Sauron. But I think
which one's Sauron?
I have no idea.
The Lord of the Rings one is?
I think it's more of a dialect thing, you know.
Right. Well, anyway, similar sounding evil villain names.
I was wondering if that was on purpose.
Boston.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, we're in Brooklyn. You're in Tennessee. We could play that game all day.
Hey, I would have just state this for the record. I am originally from Chicago.
Oh,
so
okay. Okay.
That's why I don't sound like a yokel.
All right, Ryan. Okay, so that was the X-Men Mojo Vision episode. But I want to talk about your podcast for a little bit. Your podcast is called Get Me to the Good Part, right?
Get to the Good Part.
Get to the Good Part, I'm sorry. Get to the Good Part. And like we said, it covers this book, Ready Player One. Before we yap about it, I want to say, just to give you an idea, I've read Ready Player One like maybe 6 to 7 times, mixing in like various like repeats of the Will Wheaton narration. we lived in Australia for like a half year, like 6 years ago, and we both decided to read this book together. Did we read it the year it came out?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, 2011 would have been the year it came out.
Yeah, so
I think it was the year that it came out. Yeah, then, but we got the book on tape.
Yeah, so we listened to the Will Wheaton. So the book is forever. I always hear Will Wheaton's voice now whenever I go back and read the book, which I don't know is good or bad. But it is kind of annoying to me because I can't help but hear his like slow, like deliberate paced reading of the book, which I think he did a great job, but. Like I said, it's like I can't get it out of my, I can't get the voice out of my head.
I actually really didn't like it.
I did not like
the audio version at all.
Oh, I see.
And so I switched to the print version.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember that.
Because I could not handle it. Sorry, yeah.
Let me ask you this. Was it at the point where you started saying posier?
Oh,
like
man.
All the time during that conversation.
Oh my god!
It's like I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah, I mean now there's like I just hate like you know what? Honestly, I hated the way he read the whole. He made the Artemis. Romance with the main character Wade like not good sounding.
Yeah. I mean it's rough like as a male actor right, to have to do like female voices and
well he didn't put on a female voice but he just like I don't know
yeah
a lot of that like because there's like a whole scene where they do like a chat like back and forth and he has to read it out loud, you know, so like imagine reading anyone's like Gmail chat like back and forth out loud. It's
right.
Like hard to dramatically like act that.
Yeah that's true. So anyway,
and the way he did H, I mean, he made H sound like, you know, like a pizza place owner in New York City. Yeah. Like, so like every now and again, he would just sound like normal. And then, yeah, whatever. It was just like he would like throw this weird inflection in there. Like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah, and that made the I won't like spoil it too much. But that made the H like turn like a little. Like confusing through the Will Wheaton voice, just based on like how you knew the character up to that point. Mm. It was kind of like what. but anyway, so I'll forever associate this book with like like long bus rides to like the beach in Australia, listening to this narration, and that's like a good association. So right off the bat, that's why I like
to
this
do
book.
With it really.
Yeah,
but yeah.
No. that was like a magical time in our lives. But yeah, I really fell in love with the book. I had
there's like a lot of details in there to go over, like you know, like a lot of nuggets that you could go back to and like appreciate.
And don't take this the wrong way, Ryan, but like for me, like I had like a weird love-hate relationship with this book, because on the one hand, I love the simple narrative of it and the sort of like I personally love sort of rags to riches kind of stories too. Like I find that very satisfying, like the wish fulfillment aspect of it. But like I did have some like issues with some of the weaker writing at times, of just like his writing style. You know, like I guess this was his first book, right?
Well. Yeah, it was his first novel.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, he's not Shakespeare, Ernest Cline.
Well, I think you know, if I can jump in here,
please,
this is something that you know, obviously, we're often called on, you know, especially the Ready Player One subreddit. If you're a fan of Ready Player One and you're not on that subreddit, check it out. It's a good community. Mm. You know, it's a question that comes up a lot of the time. Like, is the, you know, even amongst the fan community, right, is the writing good?
Right.
You know, I think that sometimes it's unfairly stilted against him.
I agree. Yeah.
I think sometimes with the corniness of his writing, it's almost like we don't know where Wade's at in his life when he's narrating this book, because it's obviously from the future. He's right. Retelling this story as right. the narrator.
That's a good point, yeah.
But when he goes back through, and you know, the dialogue is where people find the writing so frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, he's writing it from the perspective of a high school senior.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, these are all just basically children.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and like, you know, he talks about maturity issues and things like that. Yeah. And it's like, you're not really going to write high art if it's coming out of, yeah. you know,
and there,
out of an average.
I mean, there's like a patheticness to the character that is true to the character, but mm-hmm. maybe makes people like feel like, I don't want to associate with this, like, you know, loser kid, you know, with his... You know, like, the one scene that really strikes out to me is, sticks out to me is when he's expressing his love to Artemis in the dance hall, and he's just, yeah. like, putting it all on the line, and it's just so, like, sad. And, like, I really, like, sympathize with Artemis just leaving him in that moment, like, okay, kid, like, this is maybe you need to grow up a little, or, you know, you're just, So it's like that is like a, for me, like a little cringe-worthy moment. But
well, I think like, nerds right. probably connect yeah. with that yeah. better than the references.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, I mean, I know I did.
Yeah, no, me too. That's what I'm saying. Like, I felt cringy. I felt like a true cringiness when I like would read a scene like that. And it's like I can see people like maybe naturally like reacting against it, trying to not want to like. Have a book like confront them with those types of like sad, you know, teenage boy emotions.
I mean,
so like, who knows? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you think back, I mean, like everybody's had that moment when you're getting ready in the morning and you just flash back to a moment when you were in high school and all of a sudden, like you'll start whistling or something to just not think about it anymore. Yes. You know, some shit that embarrassed you. And you're just like, I just want to avoid that.
Yeah.
Memory no, moves.
Absolutely. If somebody like, some magical force dropped off like a 6 DVD box set of like a documentary of like my high school life, you know what I mean? Like, if I was secretly being filmed the whole time, ugh. Like, it would be the most painful, cringe-inducing.
I don't want to even think about the existence of such a thing.
It's like, it's so nice that those memories are just banished to, like, nothing, you know, just as, like, dim memories and not. You don't have to, you know, unless you have one of those, like, rare, like, superpowers that people have where they can remember every, like, minute of their lives.
You know, not want that either.
Didn't like that famous gymnast have it, like Mary Lou something?
No idea.
Mary Lou Redden.
Yeah, didn't she have that? I think she had like a photographic memory where if you say like what happened on April 17th, 1984, and she can tell you like what the weather was and what she ate for breakfast and lunch. Like that's almost like a nightmare in of itself too.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as far as the book is concerned, yes. You know.
I keep taking on these random diversions, but please, no,
man, right. you've heard get to the good part. Yes. That's 90% of the show. Yeah. No, but like seriously, and I want to be careful here because anybody who's listening to this and is a serious, you know, literary, I'll say snob,
right?
You know, or somebody who just, you know, they think the writing is bad.
Right.
Let me just preface this by saying I'm not comparing. Ready Player One to Catcher in the Rye.
Right, it's not the but great a lot American of people, novel.
Right. A lot of people said that, you know, the same thing about Holden Caulfield.
Mm.
But they didn't attack Salinger's writing. Salinger right. was a great writer.
Yeah.
But Holden Caulfield as a character was, you know, was hard to read sometimes.
Right.
But he was every kid of that era around that time, just, you know, kind of pissed off at his circumstances. I mean, he was pissed off even though he was sort of a trust fund kid, you know. I mean, he was pretty well taken care of.
Yeah.
He was in a good spot. I mean, but still, I mean, the correlation between, like, you know, Holden Caulfield and Wade Watts, I mean, there's really not much connection other than the fact that when people read it, they don't like the way it comes across to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels a little bit wrong, and I think it's because it appeals to that sort of you know, baser nature of who you were when you were a teenager. Yeah. And, you know, for most people, that sucks.
Yeah, you're absolutely
right. That's right. Because reality bites.
Yeah. I want to keep talking about the book, but I think we should, you were kind enough to invite me on one of your future episodes.
That's right.
So maybe I'll save some, like, stuff, like, specific stuff I want to say for that. But I want to ask you about your thoughts on the trailer and the movie that's coming out, the Steven Spielberg Ready Player One theatrical experience that's going to hit us next year.
Sure. What do you want to know?
I don't know. Like, how do you feel about it? Yeah. Did you like the trailer? Do you think the movie is going to translate? Do you think the book's going to translate well to a movie? I mean, are you, do you have trepidations? Are you excited? You know?
Oh man, that's a can of worms. Here's the thing. This is really great. So, Empire Magazine just put out a new issue. Or actually, it's their September issue. So I don't think it's hit newsstands quite yet.
Right.
But there were some screen grabs that we managed to get a hold of a new still from the movie that shows Artemis and Wade in a single shot.
I think we saw that. I showed that to Sonia the other day. Yeah.
Right.
That was cool. Yeah, I did appreciate that image. Yeah,
and you know, I mean, there's so what we did. I think on Friday was when that came out. Was it Thursday or Friday? Maybe it was Thursday. Mm-hmm. I think it was Thursday. Excuse me, I'm thinking out loud. but what we did is, you know, like I said, Chris is packing and John's out of town, and I really wanted to do an episode about that. So we reached out to our community, you know, the subreddit, our followers on Twitter. And we, you know, I said, look, I really want to do something talking about the movie and, you know, kind of doing an update. You know, we'd done the trailer breakdown video.
Yeah,
and all that.
I listened to that and that was very entertaining.
And yeah, we caught like maybe, you know, a third of the references in there. There was have you ever heard of Geek Critique?
No.
He's on YouTube. He had a great video that pretty much he caught just about every reference in there you could.
Right. I think I probably watched it without realizing, you know, it's Greek Geek Critique.
Yeah, Geek Critique. It's hard to say.
Right, I said Greek Critique. Greek.
He's just, yeah, he's a critic of Greek culture. Yeah. It's just, that's all he does. And Ready Player One. Right. No.
Yeah. those fields overlap.
They do. But anyways.
Yes.
So yeah, like, we reached out to our fan community. I was like, look, you know, tonight I want to do an episode based on this Empire Magazine article. And we actually got a lot of response. A lot of it was from people that we'd been talking to since the beginning of the show. One guy named Golf Machine, who's probably the world's biggest Ready Player One fan, or one of them.
Wow. He didn't win the DeLorean in the contest, did he?
No, he did not.
Okay.
But I was so jealous. He's a scholar of Ready Player One.
Oh, wow.
Another one, a guy that we know is One Among the Fence. That's his Reddit username. Mm-hmm. And what he's doing right now is, and this is a really cool project, is he's going back and he's taking the audiobook chapter by chapter and he's putting sound effects in the background.
Oh, wow.
Sweet.
Really cool. So yeah, One Among the Fence is his name on SoundCloud.
Oh, that's cool.
And if you go to the Ready Player One subreddit, you can find his work.
Is he scoring it too? Like, is he putting like incidental music and stuff in there?
Well, here and there, if it pertains to reference, but it's mostly just like, you know, some background ambient sound,
that.
I mean,
really cool.
It's really cool. Yeah, I mean, the stuff that, you know, the community does around this book. Like I said, you know, the reason this show exists beyond like a couple of chapters.
Yeah.
It's because the fan community has been so amazing.
Yeah.
You know, we operate a Discord chat with, you know, a few of these guys that were on this show now. And we're actually going to be doing, if you don't mind me kind of like mentioning it on your show for the first time, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing spinoff episodes coming up here in the next couple months, where we're going to do a weekly or biweekly episode with our community of hosts, like these guys that, you know, that generate this content that, you know, that are writing fan fiction. There's a lot of fan fiction out there that are doing little projects like that. And we're going to have hosts from the community co-host with us and bring on the content creators themselves and talk about, you know, their experience with the book and why they're creating the things that they are. So it'll be kind of a spinoff from Get to the Good Part. We'll still do the chapters, obviously, throughout the book, but we're going to have that. Wow. But yeah, I mean, it's...
Sounds great, yeah.
I, to be honest with you, kind of an embarrassing moment, but I can't even remember why I brought all that up. Well, Empire Magazine, oh, that's right, one. Yeah. But anyways, so our first community host episode is going to be coming up here in, I think we'll drop it tomorrow, or it might come out a little bit later tonight.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Can't wow. wait to hear that.
Yeah, really cool.
You know, that just makes me think, some Ultra fan, and this is not possible because it would be way too expensive and illegal, they have to animate the true story of the book. Because I know the movie is going to be like a different like take on the story, and it's going to be like remixed and it'll be its own thing. But like I feel like this book would lend itself perfectly to animation. And I don't know, that's just like a little fantasy of mine and the spur of the moment I just thought of. Wouldn't that be
good? You know what? Yeah. Here's the thing. With this did not make the cut of the episode last night when we were talking about this.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about how much better it would be as an animated miniseries.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And that ties back to what you and I were talking about with X-Men, right. how it almost make like better than a movie, it would make a miniseries. Yeah. I feel like everybody who wants something to be true to its core likes the idea of a miniseries. But the way that I always envision Ready Player One is, do you remember, I think it was in the 1970s, might have been 60s or 70s, they had that cartoon miniseries around Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
I always imagine for some
reason... It's like rotoscope animation... Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that would be perfect for Ready Player One.
Right. There was like a few, like, there was like another epic movie in that style of animation from the 70s. I can't remember what it's called, like something like The Great American Story or something.
Yeah.
That is to me the coolest like style of animation, actually, that now that you bring that up. But you know, if they did Ready Player One, it would be like a huge like 3D Pixar type thing.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Basically the movie will be.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it will. Yeah, I hope it's I don't know.
Ty Sheridan said it was going to be like 85% CGI.
Yeah, I hope it looks good. I mean, like to me, like my opinion is like my fear is I still feel like, tell me if you agree with this. I still feel like CGI at its core does not look great in movies with live action. It still just looks like fake and cartoony to me, and I don't know, like. They put so much money in all these movies now with the CGI special effects and, you know, where they create, like, whole characters out of CGI, and they just still look like out-of-place cartoons and not... I mean, maybe it's just you have to be a kid to accept any kind of special effect. Like, because when I was a kid and I saw Star Wars, for instance, I believed that was Darth Vader or Jabba the Hutt, not, like, a puppet or a guy in a suit, you know? So maybe it's just, like, more about being a kid, but I still think, like, something's lost with CGI... So I just hope that, like, you know, Ready Player One will transcend that because it's Spielberg or something. I don't know. What do you think?
I'll point this out. Yeah. When you watched Star Wars as a kid,
yeah.
and you saw the space battles and the giant spaceships, right? I mean, yeah. you thought that was a giant spaceship.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
When you see it as an adult in, you know, in modern age, you look at it and you're like, how in the hell did they do that back then?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Like it's incredible.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you know, I mean, it's that team of animators, it's that team of, you know, special effects people. If they're driven, I mean, you know, Jurassic Park is a really good example of, you know, one film that kind of set the precedent for how CGI would work in the future.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's always that film. I think if there's a film that should set that precedent, it should be Ready Player One. You've got Steven Spielberg at the helm. You've got a movie about virtual reality, which is, you know, kind of the next big wave of you know,
like
technological advancement. And you've got an opportunity here to show how good it can look. And you know, one thing that we know is that HTC, is it Sony HTC? I can't even remember now. But
something, yeah.
Yeah. They're working on something that we don't really know the details
like
of quite yet.
The book.
that ties in with the book. Yeah. So I mean, there's, I think they're working on it.
Yeah.
I think they've been giving it focus. I mean, hell, they got an extra year of post production just trying to dodge the Star Wars release.
Because the timing, I remember reading about that there's no good time to release this movie because it was just, there's too many blockbusters.
Well, they were originally going to release it on the same weekend as
Star Wars, right?
The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
When they found out Last Jedi, it was like, oh, okay, so we're going to be playing to the same audience. There's absolutely no way that's happening.
I mean, and I think despite it being Spielberg, I still think there's a chance this movie could flop, just because, you know, the trend with movie studios is that they want a property that's tried and true. As opposed to giving like something that's new and original a chance, but you know, I don't know. Hopefully, this is like a big hit and it's very well done. And I'm really personally, I'll be there opening weekend.
Yeah,
yeah. We've seen some good signs though. I mean, like a really good example is the highest that Ready Player One made it on, you know, on its initial release. The highest that it made it on the bestsellers list was number 4. Just I think last week it hit number 3.
Wow. Oh wow. So there's a huge interest in it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, I mean, and I think too, if you were to ask me, and this is another controversial topic, we won't break too much into, but you know, a lot of people ask us like, you know, how could you do this much topic on a young adult novel?
Right.
I really don't find it to be a young adult novel personally. Yeah. I mean, you might argue that, and you'd be completely fair in doing so. It's kind of an apples, you know, I mean, right. Yeah, apples to apples kind of thing. But I mean, it's if those kind of things, you know, if you were told that Hunger Games, and like you said, you're not a huge fan of Hunger Games. I'm not a huge fan of Hunger Games, but if I knew the premise of Hunger Games and I knew Steven Spielberg were directing it, probably would have saw it in the theater.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. I mean. No, yeah. Hopefully this is like the next like massive like franchise in that sense. And
we'll see.
More than anything, I just hope they do a good job. You know, personally, it's like I'm real excited. I know you're excited. And go on, Ryan. I'm sorry.
No, I just said I have faith.
Yeah, okay, good. That's good to hear. You heard it from one of the Ready Player One experts, folks. He has faith that the movie will be good. At this point, Ryan, I would like you to plug all your podcast stuff one last time.
Sure. We'll get to the good part. You can find us on any platform where you find podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, not Spotify, because I don't know what the hell their problem is. They've got one.
Oh, really?
Oh, they're so picky about content. It's weird. Oh,
I didn't even realize. Okay.
Yeah. It's tough to get a show on Spotify. Anyways, sorry, trailing off.
No, all right.
So you can find us anywhere you find quality podcasts. You can also reach us the old-fashioned way at gttgp.pod@gmail.com. Mm. You can get a hold of us on Twitter at gttgppod. And Get to the Good Part podcast on Facebook.
Excellent. I want to plug our stuff real quick before we say goodbye. First of all, thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, it was really fun meeting you.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Really great discussion. Look forward to speaking on your podcast, and thank you for that opportunity. You know, I'm just, like I said before, I'm just a huge fan of the book, and I discovered your podcast. I'm like, I want to be on this thing. I have a lot of thoughts on Ready Player One. So I thank you and your friends for indulging me when we get a chance to do that. But I want to remind all our listeners that you can subscribe to our podcast, wherever podcasts will be found as well, reputable ones, much like Ryan's. Rate and review 5 stars. Follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson, and join, as always, the X-Men Tass podcast Facebook group. You could talk to us about anything you like. Community's growing, and we love to hear from all our fans. So that's all I have to say about that. Again, Ryan Wilson, thank you so much for jumping on this episode. It was really a lot of fun to talk to you, and if you're ever interested in doing it again, just hit me up, and we'd love to have you back as a repeat guest. But maybe we'll see how much I bomb on your podcast
before you make those. You're gonna do great, man.
Okay, cool. I just want to say, everyone download and listen to Get to the Good Part and read Ready Player One, become a fan, join their Reddit community. It's a really fun, great book that just, it's like this, it's the perfect sweet spot. Like, you know, I'm born in 1984, Sonia 1985, Ryan, you're around the same age, right?
83.
Yeah, 83. It's like, so, you know, we're all X-Men Task fans. This Ready Player One is like almost made for our generation in a way too, you know. So it's a lot of similar themes, a lot of similar love of nostalgia and all that great pop culture stuff. So that's all I got to say right now. Sonia, do you have any last words here?
No, that's all.
All right. Ryan, any last words?
Nope. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we'll see you in the Oasis. How about that?
I like it.
All right. All right. All right. Thank you, Ryan.
Take care.
Thanks.